The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. This week, we're going to look at harm reduction around the world. Harm Reduction International released its annual report on the global state of harm reduction on November 1st. Let's hear first from Naomi Berkshine, Executive Director of Harm Reduction International.
The global state of harm reduction is the only report to provide an independent analysis of the state of harm reduction in the world. It's a coordinated effort amongst practitioners, partners, and experts to map the data and the services and the policy around harm reduction globally. And we're really proud that it's become the go-to source on harm reduction developments. It's also an epic project we've been undertaking since 2008. We do this with a view to providing comparative analysis, good practice, and the data to hold governments to account for their global commitments. Over the years, we've witnessed incredible growth of the movement, not only the clear and deeply relevant leadership of people who use drugs, but geographically diverse expertise. And over the past 6 years in particular, we've taken deliberate steps to prioritize voices from regions and to ensure that this research initiative is shaped by local experts and is not an extension of oppressive or colonial structures or practices. And this year, I'm really proud to say the report was driven by research partnerships in all 9 regions of the world, in addition to the survey responses we receive, the academic and grey literature that we use. So before we move on to our incredible panelists from all over the world, I want to say 2 things. First of all, it has not been an easy year again. We have not bounced back from the COVID-19 pandemic. Lebanon and Afghanistan have faced crises. Russia's violent invasion of Ukraine has caused yet uncounted death and suffering. So glad to have Ganna Dovgar here today. And amongst this crisis, amongst this pain and suffering, I feel somewhat comforted to be part of a movement that prioritizes human rights, puts a person first and steps up to provide essential services, support, to be there for each other in the context of crises. And very proud to be part of a movement that turns to community leadership, a movement that is centered around community leadership. And on that note, happy International Drug Users Day. Secondly, I'd like to name and thank the incredible team at Harm Reduction International that led this process. Colleen Daniels, who is on her second global state of harm reduction, Temi Tobi Salami doing his first global state, Sam Shirley Bevan doing his third global state from Colombia, and Suchitra Rajagopalan also on her second global state along with her partners from around the world. And also in this category, we were really, really pleased to have Anton Basenko offer a forward, giving his perspective on the war in Ukraine, and Winnie Bayanima, the executive director of UNAIDS, offering a forward with a global perspective focused on HIV.
That was Naomi Berkshine, Executive Director of Harm Reduction International, introducing the Global State of Harm Reduction Annual Report on November 1st. Now, here's Colleen Daniels, Deputy Director and Public Health Lead for Harm Reduction International.
What we want to share with you today are some of the most, some things that are actually, we haven't seen in a long time, which is improvement in actual increases in the numbers of harm reduction services that are being implemented. And like Naomi said, this particular edition of the Global State really has come from, experts in the region, from civil society, from people who are doing grassroots work, from academia, from researchers, from medical professionals. So we really do feel like this one is a little, with each edition, we are moving more and more toward having more and more people respond. So what do we have in terms of where we are today? Well, between 2020 and 2022, we have seen an uptake in an increase in the uptake of harm reduction interventions. And like I mentioned, for the first time since 2014, we have found an increase in the number of countries who are implementing harm reduction services. And this includes new needle and syringe programs opening in 5 African countries. 4 new countries have officially sanctioned drug consumption rooms, and 3 countries have introduced opioid agonist therapy for the first time. And thankfully, no country stopped the implementation of any of these services since 2020. So we have collected country by country data on the provision of safer smoking kits and pharmacotherapy for people who smoke drugs and use stimulants. This is the first time we've ever done this. And our research actually found that safer smoking kits are distributed in 19 countries around the world. And two countries, Canada and Czechia, actually have, you know, started stimulant pharmacotherapy programs, which we haven't seen before. And this is also really nice to see that countries are actually responding to the change in drug use in some parts of the world. As Naomi mentioned, economic, political, humanitarian, and environmental crises have put harm reduction at risk. In Afghanistan, where the Taliban retook the country in 2021, and it's had a significant impact on harm reduction service provision, but also on people who use drugs, on their health, welfare, and safety. Russia's invasion of Ukraine has really caused Europe's largest movement of refugees since the Second World War, and put harm reduction services not only in the Ukraine, but in neighboring countries under enormous pressure. And of course, you know, we still see that availability, accessibility, and quality remain significant issues, where in most places, services are unevenly distributed and people are still excluded. And this includes women who still remain gravely underdressed in terms of being able to access services in most contexts. So we also wanted to mention that, you know, we're still looking at the impact of on harm reduction services in terms of access and people who use drugs who face criminalization, stigma, discrimination. And we find, again, that certain populations experience these barriers particularly acutely. So I mentioned women, but we're also talking about LGBTQI plus people, people who are migrants or refugees, young people, and Black, Brown, and Indigenous people. And as mentioned, women, again, really an invisible group when it comes to accessing services. So as I mentioned, we actually have five new countries that have increased needle and syringe programs since 2020. So we actually have new countries and all in Africa. So we're seeing a real shift in Eastern and Southern Africa and West and Central Africa in terms of moving toward talking about harm reduction as well as implementing services. And this just gives you an idea across the world. Where you see the gray, this is where NSP are just not available. So you can see enormous gaps in a lot of countries, particularly in the Middle East and Africa. And of course, one of the big gaps is our NSP provision in prisons. So with regard to opioid agonist therapy, what we've seen are three new countries, again, all in Africa, who have introduced opioid agonist therapy programs since 2020. So we now have a total of 87 countries. And this slight increase is really wonderful, but obviously with only 87 countries providing these programs, we have an enormous gap. And again, you'll see with this map, a lot of the same areas where we don't have NSP, we don't have OAT either. Though in this one, you'll see in Eastern Europe and Central Asia, greater numbers who do not provide OAT. So we actually were really encouraged to see that more countries are providing drug consumption rooms. And these are known as a few different things depending on the political climate and also what people find most that works for them. So drug consumption rooms, but also known as overdose prevention centers, supervised consumption sites. So we've seen an increase of by four of these. And as you can see, I mean, 12 countries to 16 countries, very, very happy to see these four countries include them, but it's absolutely not enough, particularly because we're seeing a rise in stimulant use. So if we're seeing a rise in stimulant use, this is one way to actually provide a harm reduction service for people. We've seen supportive references to harm reduction in national policy documents increase in all regions. And now we have 104 countries, though we're clarifying that might be 105. And we'll let you know by Thursday. But at this point, it's 104 countries who are actually including these supportive references. And this also goes to the fact that, you know, we've seen an countries adopt this through not just their HIV strategies, but through other strategies. So, for example, hepatitis elimination. In some countries where they did not want to talk about harm reduction, when they started actually looking at developing and then implementing an elimination strategy for hepatitis C, they realized they have to do harm reduction in order to achieve those goals. So that has been really positive. With regard to prisons, basically, harm reduction in prisons has stalled since 2020. Only 9 countries provide NSPs in prisons. And you can see that it's really a small part of the world that's actually providing any of these services. Canada still remains the only country that has a prison-based drug consumption room. And the number of countries providing opioid agonist therapy in prisons is really unchanged at 59. And this actually shows us that we need to have more of a priority on services and service delivery in prisons. We need to be able to ensure that our brothers and sisters and others who are in prison actually have access to the same services that we do on the outside, and they're not getting it. And we're seeing horrific things going on in prisons right now because a lot of them, the funding has been cut or they've been ignored during COVID. When you see, you know, so many people dying in a rich prison like Rikers in New York, then you've got to wonder what's happening in other prisons in the US, but around the world as well. So with needle and syringe programs in prisons, this is just showing you exactly what I just mentioned. But here are some of the countries. So you can see that it's basically 3-4 countries in Eurasia, Canada, North America, and then Western Europe. So the rest of the world has really not actually looked at this at all. I mentioned hepatitis C earlier, and viral hepatitis is something that we as the harm reduction community must make more of a priority, because almost 4 in 10 people who inject drugs have active hepatitis C and 1 in 12 have active hepatitis B. So if we don't start calling for integrated service delivery or expand our definition of harm reduction from not just NSP and OAT, but to include, prevention, treatment, cure for diseases like hepatitis C, and also integrating other services into harm reduction like HIV, tuberculosis, sexual reproductive health services, providing great linkages to other services like social welfare, opportunities for people to move out of experiencing homelessness. This is what harm reduction is all about. And at the moment, we are so far behind in terms of our philosophy about what the core interventions are for harm reduction, and we haven't moved to what actually people need. So we have a lot of talk about person-centered approaches and about a rights-based approach. But if we have those, it means we have to listen to what people who use drugs need, not what we think is accurate for them or what we think we can fund. With regard to COVID, at the moment, the response is really dominated by vaccine apartheid. We have in the north, most people are now onto their second shots, they're onto their first boosters, second boosters. So they're, you know, up to 4 shots in some countries. And UNDP showed that 72% of people in high-income countries have been vaccinated with at least 1 dose. And in low-income countries, 24% have been vaccinated with at least 1 dose. This is appalling because it also means that if the general population is not accessing vaccines, imagine what is happening to people who are systematically discriminated against, stigmatized from accessing services, it means that they're not getting it at all. And so we as a community need to understand how we can actually talk about and prioritize people who use drugs accessing vaccines where they want to. We've also had the pandemic treaty that is being hosted by WHO, where they're trying to come up with some binding rules for the international community. But our voices have not been in a part of this process. As we've seen in the past 4 to 5 years, where civil society's voice is actually being silenced, where we've been pushed out of decision making, this is an area where, again, we will have to fight for our rights and fight for our voices to be heard. And, you know, one of the things that we did see coming out of COVID was that if harm reduction is not made an essential public health service during crises, where it isn't mentioned, where it isn't stated, then a lot of the gains that we have achieved will not, they will all evaporate in the next year. So I mentioned a little bit about funding, but really the funding gap is extraordinary. Have you ever heard of a 95% gap for something? Well, here we are. It's harm reduction. 95% of what is needed in order to respond to people, to the needs of people who use drugs, is just not being addressed. And right now we're in a critical situation where the Global Fund, the replenishment, did not achieve the target that was set. So this is something that we're all going to have to advocate for continuously with our governments, with donors, to be able to increase the funding for harm reduction. Thank you all so much for your time. And of course, if you have any questions, please reach out to our team here, Temi Topi, Salami, Sam, Shirley Bevan, and myself, and we can share data or help you with anything related to the report.
That was Colleen Daniels, Deputy Director and Public Health Lead for Harm Reduction International, speaking at the news conference introducing the global state of harm reduction. We'll have more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Let's take a look now more closely at one of the regions, Eastern and Southern Africa. Wangari Kamimia is a harm reduction and drug policy consultant. She was author of the Eastern and Southern African chapter of the Global State of Harm Reduction. She spoke on a regional webinar December 5th.
So we will actually start with just a background of the global state of harm reduction. Then we'll go to the region, the Eastern and Southern African data. So there is good news, because there has been an increase in uptake of harm reduction interventions since 2020. And for the first time, actually, since 2014, the global state of harm reduction found an increase in the number of countries that are implementing harm reduction services. Now we have new needle and syringe programs, and just check, they are all in Africa. We have 5 African countries that have just started new NSP programs, which is really good. And we should see that our advocacy is working. So we have 4 countries that are new, that are doing officially sanctioned drug consumption rooms. This is now globally, it's not in our region, but this is an improvement since the last 2020. Now, 3 countries have introduced OAT, and we'll see which ones are. They are all also in Africa. There is no country that stopped implementing NSP or OAT or drug consumption rooms. We have cyber smoking kits are being distributed in 19 countries around the world. But despite the good progress, and we still have challenges, economic, political, humanitarian, and environmental crisis also have put harm reduction at risk, as we know the case of Afghanistan and particularly about Ukraine. Now, what about availability, accessibility, and quality? They still remain quite a challenge. There are significant issues, because even where services exist, they are unevenly distributed in most countries, so that people in rural areas or those not living in capital cities are often poorly served. And then we have people who use drugs globally still face criminalization, stigma, discrimination, which is preventing them from accessing services. However, some certain populations are experiencing these barriers particularly acutely. We have women, the LGBTQI+ people people who are migrants or refugees. We have young people, we have the Black, Brown, and the Indigenous people. There is lack of services that are tailored to their needs. This is just an emphasis on women who use drugs. They still continue to be gravely under-addressed in most contexts. Okay, this is about the NSP, the data on NSP. Six countries, and this is inclusive of Burundi, Cote d'Ivoire, you can see, and Uganda in our region. They are the countries that have started NSP since 2020. We go to the countries that have started OAT or are implementing OAT, opioid agonist therapy, and we've got 87 countries. And the three new ones, or the ones that have started, are all also in Africa. We have Algeria, Mozambique, and we have Uganda in the Eastern and Southern African region. About drug consumption rooms, there is data showing that we have 16 countries in 2022. Yes, as I mentioned, we do not have any country in Africa or even from our region that is implementing. Now, what about supportive reference to harm reduction in national policy? Yeah, we have 105 countries, which is a 20.7% increase in 2022. That is something to be proud of as harm reduction fraternity, that are now referring explicitly to harm reduction in national policy documents. And we have 9 of these countries from the Eastern and Southern Africa region. When it comes to harm reduction in prisons, it has stalled. It has stalled. There's no improvement. And we still have only 9 countries that are operating NSPs in prison globally, but we do not have one from our region. We have Canada being the only country that has a prison-based drug consumption room. And the number of countries that are providing OAT in prison still remained at 59. Now, we need to talk about hepatitis C. Data is showing that 4 in 10 people who inject drugs have active hepatitis C. And 1 in 12 have active hepatitis B, which leads us to this, that there is need for national programs to urgently integrate community-based HIV and hepatitis C and hepatitis B test and treat services. It's very, very, very important as the standard of care for people who use drugs, and so, of course, to decrease the deaths and prevent onward transmission of HIV, hepatitis B, and hepatitis C. Important to note is that community-based hepatitis treatment for people who use drugs is safe and highly effective. Let's come to our region, the Eastern and Southern African region. So this table does summarize everything about the region. We have 21 countries in the region, from Angola to Zimbabwe, arranged alphabetically. We have size estimates are showing around 410,000 people who use drugs. But of course, we understand this must be on the lower side. There are countries that have evidence of drug use, but do not, of even injecting drug use, but they do not have size estimates. So the size estimate is almost 500,000. Then we've got the HIV prevalence is 21.8%. We lack data for hepatitis C and hepatitis B prevalence, though we have a few countries that have some data. Now, when it comes to NSP programs, we have 7 countries which also are doing the opioid agonist therapy. We have Kenya, we have Mauritius, we do have Mozambique, we do have Seychelles in South Africa, and Uganda and Tanzania. And this is an area to look at and see where will we be in 2024. Because already we've seen there is improvement since 2020, and we are hoping up to 2024 that there will be an increase in the countries that are implementing NSP, OAT, and also when it comes to peer distribution of naloxone, there's only Kenya and South Africa that reported having the intervention. When it comes to NSP in prison, I've not put it here, but there is no country that is doing NSP in prison. There is no country that has a drug consumption room in the region. But when it comes to opioid agonist therapy, there are 4 countries, and that's Kenya, that's Mauritius, that's Seychelles, and there is Tanzania. Now, this will be spoken more about from the South African speaker, that's Sean, because we will see there's increase in use of stimulants in the region, but we still do not have any country that is actually implementing harm reduction for stimulants, including safer smoking equipment. This is just what I presented. The rest is just now graphics. more than one in five people who inject drugs in the region are living with HIV. And this is data that we need to bring to the awareness of even our policymakers. The region is marked with increasing heroin use. Data is showing increasing injecting drug use. It's showing increasing HIV and hepatitis infection among people who inject drugs. This is the bigger picture of HIV in the region. Now, Eastern and Southern Africa is home to more than half of all people living with HIV in the world. However, we've had quite some progress, and there's a decline by 44% since 2010 to 2021 in the general population. But you can see among people who inject drugs, we still have 21.8 rate compared with 6.2 rate of HIV among the general population. Now, this is the main challenge, the punitive policies that drug use and even possession for personal use is criminalized. We have minimal data. We have reduced lack of political will because, of course, it's a criminal activity. And then we have limited funding and stigma and discrimination. I'm almost ending by looking at the use of cocaine and methamphetamine in the region. It has increased since 2020. Now, South Africa is estimated to be one of the largest meth consumer markets in the world. And we also have significant markets in these countries, including Botswana, Eswatini, Kenya, Lesotho, Malawi, Mozambique, Uganda, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. I mentioned earlier women who use drugs still continue being left behind. And I had mentioned about the nine countries that explicitly refer to harm reduction. When it comes to funding, the gap is widening. The gap of funding is widening. We are having less and less funds being available for harm reduction. And this is the same case in our region as other low and middle income countries, that the funding for harm reduction is only 5% of what is required. I want to add by saying the commitment that has been noted between 2020 and 2022 to implementing of harm reduction is a clear testament to the dedication, resilience, and strength of communities, civil society, and international organizations, which have done advocacy successfully for a health and human rights-based approach to drug use despite extremely limited resources. I want to thank you, and if you have any question, please feel free to reach out to Harm Reduction International. You have the contact of Colin Daniels, who is the Deputy Director, Public Health Lead. So you have the email here. Thank you very, very much. And thank you for the great work you advocate for harm reduction are doing in the region. I want to stop there. Thank you.
That was Wangari Kimimia, a harm reduction and drug policy consultant who was author of the Eastern and Southern African chapter of the Global State of Harm Reduction, speaking in a regional webinar December 5th discussing Harm Reduction International's annual Global State of Harm Reduction Report. You can find HRI's Global State of Harm Reduction Report by going to their website, which is hri.global. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh.
I do favor decriminalization of marijuana. I have a friend who has a son, 16 years old, in jail. He was in jail. He'll have a criminal record all of his life. He was found with a very small amount of marijuana. That, to me, is so bad.
Find this edition of Century along with an archive of past shows at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is
for
Doug
the Drug
McVeigh
Truth Network.
So
this
long.
Is Doug McVeigh asking
so
you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.